JC Corcoran Podcast.
This is the city, Los Angeles, California. For the 3.5 million people who live here, the city is one big shopping center. Retail stores in Los Angeles take in more than $2 million a day. Some products aren't sold so openly. Marijuana is one of them. A bag like this goes for $15. It's called a lid. The finished cigarette is called a joint. It sells on the street from 50 to 75 cents. The seller claims it's heaven. The buyer soon finds out it's hell. It's a closed contract until we find out. Then I go to work. I carry a badge.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu.
Thursday, April 20th, 2023. You are at jcontheline.com. Welcome to 420. Jack Webb getting the joint rolling here today. He was such a dick. His show was stupid, Dragnet. You know, everybody was so stiff. The dialogue with that dopey staccato.
What's that? Drugs.
No, narcotics. I said, yeah, shut up.
The whole dirty business.
And again, I know it was 1967, 68, 69, right in there, and things were different. We didn't think the same way about pot back then, but he was so self-righteous, and everything was about how great the police were. And I had sort of an epiphany when I was a young boy. You know, the Democratic National Convention next year is going to be in Chicago. And when I hear that, all I can think about is when I was a kid and they set the city on fire. And you had the Walker Report, Dan Walker, the former governor of Illinois. They put together a commission and they said, well, what the hell happened here? Because we had rioting, we had hippies, we had yippies, we had people just being stuffed into buses and taken to jail because the paddy wagons weren't, big enough. They had, you know, hundreds, maybe even thousands of people who were hauled off, arrested, all this while the convention was going on. You had the original Mayor Daley. I'm talking about the old Mayor Daley. And he's yelling at the podium. And poor Hubert Humphrey is standing there going, I just want to be president. That's all. But when the Walker Report came out, you know, they basically said, let's get somebody who's got an impeccable record here, Dan Walker. Let's have him do the commission and find out what really happened in a nonpartisan way. And he spent about a year putting this thing together, and they put out the Walker Report. And I still remember, like it was yesterday, he referred to it as a police riot. So while everybody was thinking it was the hippies and it was the yippies and the protesters who were causing the problems, and I'm not saying they weren't, I'm just saying that they were there to protest and to angrily protest in some cases and to rock the boat, and many of them knew they were going to get arrested. I'm not trying to say that those people were insurrectionists too, and they didn't like the way things were going, so they basically tore Grant Park apart, and they tried to get out of the confines of Grant Park where the Chicago police had put them. Yeah, I was living there at the time. I was a kid. It was 1968, so how old was I? I was not quite 15. But I was a weird kid. You know, I was into news and broadcasting, all that sort of stuff. So most of my friends were not the least bit interested in what was going on down there. But, you know, also I had a sister who still have a sister who was 5 years older than me. And she was very, very politically active and really opened my eyes to a lot of stuff that I wouldn't have seen until years later had she not sort of, you know, sat me down and educated me as to what the fuck was going on. And I still remember it was shortly after that I was dating. You know, kid, you're 15, you got a girlfriend, you're going steady, I don't know, whatever. Her name was Mary Holdorf, okay? And she had a brother who was in Vietnam. I still remember seeing the star in the window on the front door or something. And she was acting really, really weird for a while. And she finally told me that they had not received a letter from him in something like over a month, which was totally out of character for him. And so they were really, really scared. And they were worried that perhaps he had met an untimely fate. But then the other thing, you know, regarding the police, because, you know, I was born and raised, it was like, leave it to Beaver, you know? It's like, you know, you're in trouble, go ask a policeman. A policeman, you know, is impeccable in his background, his reputation, and gosh, the policeman will help you if you're in trouble. It was right around that time, you know, the death of Bobby Kennedy and Dr. Martin Luther King. You know, I could smell the smoke from the projects. I lived only 7 miles from Grant Park, where all the rioting was going on, only 4 blocks from the housing projects. And there was a street that was sort of like the line of demarcation, the way the city of Chicago had had put this thing together with very, very clear intent. We're keeping the black people over here. We're keeping the white people over here. And there was one street, and it was the dividing line. And everything on the north side of that street was white. Everything on the south side of that street was black. And once a year, when we would play in tournament baseball, they would bring in the team from that black housing project. And these kids were really good. They would do things like, you know, break up a double play at second. Uniforms weren't very nice. Their organization seemed to be a little bit lackluster. But I remember the ball players, I remember the kids being really good. But for us, it was, I guess you would say, an education, because the only time we ever saw black people was once a year at that tournament. And you would just stare. You'd just stare at them. During that whole period of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in 68 and all of the racial strife that was going on, you know, in addition to, you know, sort of thinking to myself, hey, wait a minute, maybe there's more to this police thing than I thought. Well, there's a kid I played ball with. He was 1 year younger than me. His name was Greg Therese. I still remember this. And his father was a Chicago police officer. Still remember there were times where he was on my team, and sometimes I would look over and I would see his father in complete Chicago police uniform with a gun and the whole thing, standing, you know, behind the dugout watching a couple of innings of the game. His family was very, very Italian. Perhaps the most Italian family I could even think of at that point. You know, you're 14 years old. I can't ever remember seeing anybody. These people were like La Russa Italian, you know, wearing it on their sleeves. We're talking Sicilian Italian. This guy would, he'd love to hold court, you know, and he would stand around. He would be telling all these stories about, you know, police officers and stuff that they encountered, and funny stories, but funny in sort of a perverted way. I distinctly remember overhearing a conversation. Well, it wasn't even a conversation. He was just talking, and the fathers were all sort of standing around listening. And, you know, he's telling the story about working the convention, working Grant Park, working in the midst of the protests and the police violence and everything else that was going on. He's like, well, you know, I grabbed this hippie and I had to throw him into the paddy wagon. And I grabbed him by the shirt and by the hair and I threw him towards the paddy wagon. And guess what happened? I missed. Well, that kind of crap. I remember thinking to myself, you know, you're 14 years old and you're hearing this and you're like, wait a minute, that's not the way it's supposed to be. It's quite the eye-opener, quite the eye-opener. But it was all symptomatic of that era back in the 1960s when things started changing. You sort of started to wake up and realize that maybe a lot of the stuff that you were told in school was bullshit. Jack Webb and that stupid TV show were not helping. I watched that a couple of times a week just really to get sound bites like the one you heard, because some of the stuff is just so absurd and it just capitalizes on stereotypes from the 1960s. Everybody's walking around wearing suits. Just cracks me up. You know what else I watch on weekends? I watch Lawrence Welk. And I'll tell you why. Because again, that's right during that era. I am fascinated by that era in our country. Sort of like the mid to late 60s and into the early 1970s. But right there, you know, right at 1969, that, as far as I was concerned, was my awakening, my spiritual awakening, my intellectual awakening, my musical awakening, everything. It was that summer of 1969. My mom used to sit there and watch Dragnet like it was a serious show. And then I would watch it going, well, it's all just, I'm not sure that at 14 I knew the word propaganda, but if I did, I used it. We'll come back and visit more with Jack Webb and the fine folks from Dragnet as we roll here on 420. I'll get to all that here in just a minute. The SpaceX rocket exploded today. This was the biggest one I think they ever tried to shoot up there for some reason. It was just huge, and just a couple of seconds after it took off, it was kaboom. So I've driven over to Cape Canaveral a couple of times in anticipation of getting it off my bucket list because I've never seen a space launch. And I went, and twice it's been scrubbed. So now, it's like, and that's not exactly a hop, skip, and a jump over there. So, you know, I don't know. Didn't go today, but now I'm really disappointed because probably the only thing better than a launch for Cape Canaveral would be a launch that goes awry and you have a big explosion. That's pretty cool. I would have wanted to see that. A major, major league story here today. The Oakland A's, after years of speculation and crowds that just keep dwindling and dwindling and dwindling down to nothing, the Oakland A's have signed a deal to take them to Las Vegas by 2027. So a couple more years. In 4 years, you got to hope that the Oakland franchise still has anybody interested in it because, you know, it's the same thing that happened when the Big Red left St. Louis. We were supporting that team. It was total bullshit, and it was one of those things that the media really, they twisted the story to make it fit their narrative, and they liked showing all these empty seats at Busch Stadium. But you know damn well, if you were there, and I was, that St. Louis supported that team, and it wasn't until Bill Bidwell finally officially announced that he was leaving for Phoenix, until he finally made the formal announcement, that's when we stopped going. And that's when the media started getting all these shots of the empty stadium, and it's like, that's bullshit. That was a lie. They twisted that story and said it wasn't until after he made the announcement. You got to figure that the next 4 years in Oakland are going to be brutal now that everybody there knows that the team is leaving. Tiger Woods had another surgery on the leg he injured in that 2021 car accident. He looked terrible out on the course there a couple of weeks ago. And Winnipeg Jets center Morgan Barron took a skate to the face. It opened up a cut over his eye that required, get this, 72 stitches. 72. So he got into the clubhouse, they stitched him up, and they're like, all right. He's like, I'm going back in the game. And he did. After 72 stitches in the face, he went out there and still played. In case you ever wondered whether hockey players are tough.
What are y'all doing in here?
We're smoking reefer, and you don't want no part of this.
Shh. You're smoking reefers?
Yeah, of course we are. Can't you smell it?
No, Sam, I can't.
Come on, Dewey. Join the party.
No, Dewey. You don't want this. Get out of here.
You know what? I don't want no hangover. I can't get no hangover.
It doesn't give you a hangover.
I get addicted to it or something?
It's not habit forming.
I don't know. I don't want to overdose on it.
You can't OD on it.
It's not going to make me want to have sex, is it?
It makes sex even better. It
sounds kind of expensive.
It's the cheapest drug there is.
Hmm.
You don't want it.
I think I kind of want it.
Okay, but just this once. Come on in.
Marijuana. I like marijuana, but you like marijuana. We like marijuana too.
How are you doing, boys?
We're groovy.
Yeah, JC.
You know, Tommy, I got to tell you something. You got one of those voices that if you had not chosen to go into comedy and the stuff that you're doing, you could have been like, what's that guy's, Ted Williams, the guy they found on the roadway, the side of the road in Columbus, Ohio? Ted, you just Williams. Got one. You got a set of pipes. You could have done this job. You could have been on the radio.
Well, that's because I never did cocaine when I was growing up.
You just waited till you were an adult.
Yeah. Oh, I never did cocaine.
Well, you guys were ahead of your time, Cheech. I mean, you look around now, state by state, one after another, everybody's selling pot.
You know, Tommy said a long time ago, what if we're right?
What if we're right, yeah.
And how does that feel now?
It feels great.
Vindicated.
I just came from my pot doctor yesterday, and It's going legal. We're working on a strain, a Tommy Chong strain.
I lived in Missouri for 29 years, so I know of John Ashcroft, the former governor, the former senator, and the former attorney general.
And
people, you know, I think know the score on this. This was a setup. This was entrapment.
Yeah.
And Tommy, if you could come face to face with John Ashcroft today, what would you say to him?
I'd punch him.
Where does that line form?
I wouldn't say anything. I'd just punch him.
Just cold cock
him. And then
him.
He'd go, what'd you do that for? And I'd say, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm sorry.
You got any good guesses? Yeah. Yeah.
See, you know, hey, John, you know, here, light up, man. Come on, see.
I mean, what do you say to a guy that drapes the statues in Washington because they're half nude or something?
Well, cement, dude, they just turn them on.
Yeah. I mean, what do you say to the guy? This is 2013.
Turns me on.
Well, I've often said that if anybody on the planet needed to smoke a joint, there's nobody I can think of more than John Ashcroft.
And Mary Beth Buchanan, you know, the prosecutor.
What is she doing now? Did she finally make bones?
Mary Beth Buchanan ran for, there was a Republican seat that was open. And so she was running for a governor or something, Congress.
Uh-huh.
And the Democratic Party of Pittsburgh called me and flew me in to campaign against Mary Beth Buchanan. And she lost by a landslide.
Oh, baby.
Go. And she said, my only regret is that I didn't get Tommy Chong more time in jail.
Yeah. Wow. Payback. Still going on.
Payback is so sweet.
Yeah. Guys, we got to let you go. Cheech and Chong's animated movie. We'll give them the poop on where they can see it and how and all that stuff. Guys, thanks very much. Continued success. Great to talk to you again.
Thanks,
you too.
Say.
Take care, man.
You know, we've heard a lot of people claim that marijuana is harmless. Professors, doctors, even some ministers. Now, maybe they know something that we don't. All we have to go on is the record. We know that practically every kid we pick up on LSD has marijuana in his pocket. We know that we arrest more than 14,000 addicts a year. They're on heroin, cocaine, methadrine, pills, you name it, and they're using it. And they all have one thing in common. They began with marijuana.
If you're claiming that smoking marijuana automatically makes you a drug addict, I offer myself as proof you're wrong.
No, lady, we don't claim that every person who smokes marijuana becomes an addict. But we do know one thing for sure. No addict ever got there in one big step. They had to begin somewhere. And they all began with marijuana.
Yeah, Jack, see, you're an actor. You're not a real police officer. And if you were any kind of sociologist at all, you'd know that what you just said is completely false. The gateway drug to getting fucked up is beer. It's beer. Whatever age you are, you get that beer buzz, and then somebody comes along and says, here, try some of this. It starts with beer, and it always has. See, you can't say that.
Now, you listen to me. You tippy around with marijuana long enough, and you're going to buy yourself a lot of grief. After a while, marijuana won't be enough. You'll start looking for a bigger kick, and then a bigger one after that. And all of this is going to go down the tubes. Your job, your house, car, family, everything. We've seen it happen before. And not just to the neurotics and psychotics that wife of yours talks about, but to nice, clean-cut kids from good families with good educations. They start out just like you, and they end up mainliners, shooting it in their arms. And they end up dead, or wishing they were.
Maybe.
Look, everybody says no, not me. I'll never get hooked. They say it right up to the day they start climbing the walls, and they began saying just what you are now. There's nothing wrong with marijuana. Well, there's nothing wrong with a gun either until you pull the trigger. You can't even buy this stuff without getting dirty. Think about the guy you bought it from. You think he has a wife, a nice child, a home?
Actually not, Jack. I bought it from the government at the dispensary right down the street. The one that charges me $250 a year for my medical marijuana license. But go ahead.
Don't you take my word for it. Just take a look at the guy you bought from. And look hard, fella, because you're looking right in the mirror. Now, if that's how you want it, there's nothing we can do about it right now. Next time it may be different. And you believe me, boy, there'll be a next time.
Maybe it pays to remind everybody that that was only about 50 years ago. Not even one full generation. We got politicians right now who are trying to take us back to that time. But you're smart. I don't have to tell you that. All right, I want to shift gears now. And this is a major shift. I think you'll agree. One of my public relations friends in St. Louis, the lovely Julie Lawley, said, how would you like to talk to the guy who's basically managing the new venue over there in the Foundry? It's that wine place you've been hearing about that has really, really good food and also does a lot of live entertainment. Oh, and by the way, and this was the first, by the way, that got my attention. By the way, he's also a baseball player. He plays on the Israeli baseball team. And then there's another, by the way, and that is his name is Shlomo Lipitz. Now, if you're me, How can you turn something down like that?
A six-team Israeli baseball league begins its inaugural season on June 24th in Israel. The top 10 signs you're at an Israeli baseball game. Number 10, injuries go untreated because the team doctor is completely surrounded by mothers trying to get him to meet their daughters. Number 8, box seats go for $350, but for you, $295.
Okay. Very good.
Number 4, all the players also act as their own agents. Now, see, I like that one. Number 3, in the post-game interview, players aren't thanking Jesus. Number 2, whenever an ump calls a batter out, he follows it up with, "And would it kill you to call your mother once in a while?" And finally, the top sign you're at an Israeli baseball game, the only hot dog available, Hebrew National.
Now,
does that help?
I was waiting for that.
You know, concert promoter sounds like one of those fun jobs that everybody would like to have. And I have a couple of friends in St. Louis who are concert promoters, and, you know, they can look a little haggard sometimes. Is concert promoting a fun job, or is it one of those things where you just want to pull out your remaining hair at the end of the week?
Well, like any other job, it has its ups and downs. I would say, being involved in booking shows, booking artists is the fun part, because you get to book some of your favorite artists and get to discover new music all the time. The challenging part of promoting shows is, A, trying to sell the tickets and finding the right audience, but also many times you're competing against other promoters, and you're just trying to get the shows. But I like to call our gig is kind of a more of a glorified office job.
So for somebody like you, do you spend most of your time on the phone with agents or other promoters, or just, you know, in layman's terms, how does it actually work?
One is just dealing with agents. That's the proper way to go. You know, every national and international touring artist has a manager and an agent, so we deal with the agent and submit the offers and get the avails and all that fun jazz. Then there's, of course, making sure that all the moving parts are moving correctly. So making sure that we're marketing, that the show is marketed, making sure that the execution is there to make sure that the both the fans and the artists have a great time. And then lastly, during the show, I see my job as a promoter to be at the show my face. You know, one of the big things that separates us, the City Winery, than a lot of other venues, we take pride in making sure that City Winery has a face and a name. I want people who come play City Winery not because it's four walls with a City Winery sign, but because they get to know the people that work there and they feel a real connection. And building relationships with the artist the night of is a big part of how I see my job as a promoter.
Somebody told me you're working with Paul McCartney on something. Is that correct?
Well, we just produced a large, very big show at Carnegie Hall, part of a nonprofit music education program type of benefit show that we've been producing for the past 18 years. So it's basically 21 artists all performing one song of the honoree. And we've done these for, you know, The Who, David Bowie, Paul Simon, Prince, David Byrne. They have to be a living singer-songwriter at the time that we do it. We raise over $150,000 every single show for music education programs. So this year we honored Sir Paul McCartney, and we had an amazing lineup of artists who all kind of did their own spin on their favorite McCartney songs.
All right, let's talk about City Winery in specific. What are you trying to do with the place? What's it all about?
Well, it's just providing this really one-of-a-kind unique experience for both the fans and the artists. It's, imagine just a supper club with just not a bad seat in the house. It's an adult experience. And what I mean by that is you come, part of the process of buying tickets, you choose your own seat from a seat picker. Doors open when they're advertised. The show starts when we advertise. So shows usually start at 6. Doors are at 6. Shows are at 8. By 9:30, 10 o'clock, you could go back home. There's not a bad seat in the house. The food is great. The wine is great. You know, one of the big cool things about City Winery is that we make our own wine. So, you know, you could sip from wine from grapes that we buy from Argentina and Chile and Argentina and California and Oregon. And just an opportunity to see some of your favorite artists in a very intimate space. I mean, one of our taglines is indulge your senses. You know, we want people to drink from a beautiful Rideau glassware and to sit in a real wooden chair and to feel the warmth of the of the decor and to be able to taste great food and sip on great wine and listen to their your favorite artists on a great sounding system. And really that, I think, what separates us from most places. We are all about the small detail. We're all about making sure that every single person who comes has a great experience. We're very lucky to be in a great part of St. Louis, the Foundry, which is, you know, 10 minutes from basically everything. And yeah, so far so good.
And what caliber of act are we talking about musically?
So we see ourselves as kind of small people with big aspirations, meaning we are both in town and in every market to support local and regional acts. That's a big part of who we are. But the idea is to be able to go see an artist that you normally see in a much bigger room in a much smaller, intimate space. And our thought is to give you some insight on how we're looking at things, where if you have an artist like Rufus Wainwright or Mark Roberge, who you'd normally see in a, let's say, a 600 to 1,000 capacity room and pay $25, $30 and many times sit in the nosebleeds or we can't really look into the artist's eyes and see their expression. The idea is that you'll pay a little more premium for the ticket, but you get to see the artist in a much smaller space.
This, when they told me this part of the interview experience with Shlomo Lipetz, I said to myself, wait a minute, we're talking about the same guy here, the same guy who is promoting the concerts and running City Winery, is also an Israeli baseball player. Let's talk about that. How long has that been going on?
Well, I'm in the ripe age of 44, and I've been playing baseball since I was 10, and basically playing for the Israeli national team since I was 10 years old. So, I'm born and raised in Israel. I followed my dream to play baseball in the United States. So after my three years in the military, I walked on and played 4 years in college and played some pro ball. And the one kind of leitmotif of my life has been just every year playing with the Israeli national team, which for many years was not really a competitive team. We were in the depth of Pool C and Pool B in Europe. But ever since 2012, I've been lucky enough to play in three World Classics and just a couple of weeks ago in Miami.
But so you're talking about the World Baseball Classic that we were all watching a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And you were playing. Playing on the Israeli team.
World Baseball Classic. Yep. You know, it's been quite a journey, both from a baseball career, but also, of course, doubling up as a programming director and the president of venues at City Winery. And I'm lucky enough to have a boss who has agreed to for me to have this double life.
All right. Exactly. Shlomo Lipetz, best of luck with City Winery. It seems like, you know, things are really moving along, and the word is out, and you're getting a good reputation early on. Best of luck. I'll be dropping in soon to check out the scene, and in the meantime, best of luck to you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the love and support. Thank you.
Die Spiel, es ist ein Schande, als wenn verspielt, weil es ist eins, zwei, drei Streichs bis neus in der Baseball Game.
Who would have ever guessed that the Yiddish word for Cracker Jack was Cracker Jack? Speaking of baseball, they caught Max Scherzer, who's now with the New York Mets. He was thrown out of the game against the Dodgers the other night for apparently having an illegal foreign substance on his glove. I don't know if it was identified as pond scum, but we're checking. There's a couple of more rumors that have been gurgling from increasingly reliable sources that Tyler O'Neill might be on the trading block. Cardinals are trying to get another starting pitcher. Tyler O'Neill is not going to be enough. Supposedly, there's been a lot of questioning of Cardinal management about the availability of Tommy Edman or Brendan Donovan, who they went along with Tyler O'Neill. Okay, then maybe we give you a starting pitcher. The Florida Marlins have the Chicago Cubs coming into play soon, and the Marlins have decided to promote the whole weekend in a very, very special way. It is going to be a Steve Bartman weekend when the Cubs are in Miami. Oh, that's classy. Oh, and Wilson Contreras, who I don't know what, 72 hours ago, people were still calling for his head. I want Yachty back. Oh, good. You want Yachty back, do you? Well, I live in the real world, and Yachty's retired, so get used to it. Wilson Contreras going into yesterday's game, his last 13 at-bats, 5 hits, 3 doubles. In his last 8 at-bats, 4 hits, 2 doubles. And a shot yesterday afternoon that was beyond the left field bullpen. Maybe everybody can just shut up now. All right, a couple more 420 notes for you here today. Americans spent about $30 million on legal weed products last year. That's up from $12 billion the year before, so it more than doubled. The $30 billion last year was more than we spent on chocolate, craft beer combined. The legal cannabis may ultimately help boost chocolate sales, along with other munchies like ice cream, Cheez-Its, candy bars, potato chips. Speaking of marijuana and chocolate, a company called Zen Cannabis has created a 420-pound chocolate bar in honor of 420. It's 9 by 4 feet, three inches thick. It includes 4.2 million milligrams of THC. The asking price for the chocolate bar, $42,000. Let me head over to the ATM. A study found the best cities for stoners: Portland, Oregon, Denver, Buffalo, Seattle, and Baltimore. They based it on things like dispensaries per capita price and the fact that weed is fully legal in those states. The worst cities: Birmingham, Alabama, Memphis, Tennessee, Louisville, Kentucky, all where pot is not fully legal. Another study ranked the best cities to get stoned in, but the top 5 are different: San Francisco, LA, Denver, Santa Ana, California, and Vegas. If you've ever wondered how the 420 thing got started, USA looked into it, and I know there's varying versions of this. The top theory is that in 1970, some high schoolers in California used to meet at 420 after school was over, and then they would toke up, and 420 was their code word for it. But I've also heard that there was, in the Haight-Ashbury district of the Oakland area, technically at Berkeley over there, that there was a stopped clock at 420 that was on display, and somehow that became involved in the whole thing. A police department in Pennsylvania is offering a free bag of Doritos to anybody who brings their pot to have it tested today. Recreational use still illegal in Pennsylvania, so yes, it's a trap. If you turn in your dealer, you get a family-sized bag. Oh, good. And then you better leave town. And in 2018, Girl Scouts Colorado updated its cookie sales policy to allow girls to sell their boxes outside of cannabis dispensaries. Location, location, location. All right, late night tonight, Ray Romano on with Jimmy Fallon. Kimmel's got Jake Gyllenhaal and Whitney Cummings. Rachel Weisz on with Colbert, and James Corden has Billy Porter and Lisa Kudrow. The second season premiere of Mike Judge's Beavis and Butthead on Paramount Plus today. Also, the series premiere of The Diplomat, that's on Netflix. Keri Russell playing a career diplomat who lands a high-profile job she's unsuited for in the midst of an international crisis. Twilight getting the TV treatment. Early stages. George Clooney still teases Mark Wahlberg and Johnny Depp about the fact that they both passed on the movie Ocean's 11. Quote, they regret it now. I regret doing fucking Batman. Quote. Will Ferrell producing and starring in a comedy series about golf. He'll play a professional golfer who becomes the face of a controversial new league competing with the PGA. Birthdays today. I know a lot of men find her ravishing. I think she has a head like a shoebox. Miranda Kerr is 40 today. Carmen Electra. Whoa. Send her to Central Missouri to have her odometer rolled back. She's 51. Crispin Glover, 59. That would be your George McFly. Don Mattingly, former Yankee star, 62. Clint Howard, Ron's brother, who's in all of his brother's movies, 64. Jessica Lange, 74. Ryan O'Neal, 82. George Takei, or Takei, however you like to pronounce it, 86. It's also Adolf Hitler's birthday. Fenway Park opened in Boston on this date 111 years ago in 1912. The Columbine Massacre was on this day 24 years ago in 99. And 2 years ago today in 2021, former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin was convicted of all charges and found guilty for the murder of George Floyd. Yeah, but it's 420 today in a new study. Marijuana helped symptoms in 87% of Parkinson's patients. The other 13 left the study still not understanding why anybody would enjoy a fish concert. Anti-drug activists say pot makes you lazy. I don't know. Snoop Dogg sure seems to be in a lot of commercials these days. It's 420, the most important day of the year for stoners, followed closely by Seth Rogen's birthday. And with that, we tell you, for God's sakes, watch out later on today. After an 85 yesterday and another warm day today, between 3 and 7 late this afternoon into this evening, there could be severe weather in St. Louis. We're at a level 2 out of 5. And then on Sunday morning, especially in the hinterlands, there's a strong possibility there's going to be frost on Sunday morning. This is why Dave always says, May 15th, before you start planting anything tender, May 15th. And it was back on this date in 2004, our relatively new morning show on K-Hits 96 was revealed to have finished number one in the ratings in adults 25-54, which is why they brought me over and we did it in about a year. That being, of course, the third also ran morning show that yours truly and his compadres took to number one. Never happened before, will never happen again. Three also ran morning shows taken to number one by yours truly. No wonder they're afraid of me, huh? Yeah. We're here every weekday morning right about 11 o'clock. You can email me at jc at jconline.com. Facebook, the Showgram with JC Corcoran. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
We're groovy.
Yeah, JC.
The JC Corcoran Podcast.